This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
This is the Puck Podcast with Eddie Garcia and Doug Stolhand.
From Los Angeles, I'm Eddie Garcia, along with Doug Stolhand. Thanks for joining us for another edition of the Puck Podcast, brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. It's Tuesday, November 24th, 2020. On this week's show, in the first period, we'll give you a team-by-team report of all the latest news from the past week in the NHL, including a potential problem in getting next season started, and it has nothing to do with COVID. In the second period, we'll review episode 2 of Hockey, A People's History, entitled The Money Game. That is the excellent hockey documentary from several years ago that we are bringing back to review and discuss. And in the third period, we will read your emails, and we do have emails, all that and more coming up on this edition of the Puck Podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Doug Stolhand.
And a good afternoon, morning, or evening, wherever you may be listening. Thank you for joining us once again here on the Puck Podcast. We know you have many options to fill your day, and we appreciate you letting us be a part of it. And hello to you, Eddie Garcia. Been a week since I've seen you. We played Battlefront, of course, and had our usual frustration yelling at strangers that are better than us at video games, but how are things in Casa Garcia?
Things are fine. I want to wish everyone a very happy Thanksgiving, such as it is, regardless of what your situation is. Still many things for us all to be thankful for. First and foremost, our health and the health of our friends and family. And hope that if you're listening to this, that is the situation going on with you guys. But much like your family, Doug, we are not having Thanksgiving with our family this year. It's a bummer because, as I mentioned, it is my favorite holiday, and yours as well, I believe. But,
yep.
You know, we still have football, and my favorite team, the Steelers, are 10-0, and they're playing a Thanksgiving game. I think they're going to play this game coming up against their most hated rivals. So hopefully they can give me a Thanksgiving treat and continue the undefeated streak. And my wife is going to make me a scaled down version of the Thanksgiving dinner. I will have some turkey. I'll have some stuffing. I'll have some mashed potatoes. The basics, if you will, for us anyway, as far as the Thanksgiving meal. So we'll have a little taste of it, and hopefully it'll be a nice day.
Well, that I'm both sorry and happy to hear that, because it means you guys are being safe, and we'll do your part to keep each other healthy. But that does suck that you're not going to be able to get together. I know we have listeners that are traveling and getting together with family, and everybody's going to make their decision based on what they think is best for them and their family. I just hope that there are no repercussions to decisions either way, that nobody gets sick as a result of their problem. Nobody loses out on an opportunity that they may have had either now or in the future because of their decision. So it is what it is. But we're having Thanksgiving tonight here at Stolhand House, because we both, as I said, my wife and I both work on Thanksgiving Day. So we are having it tonight. My wife is in the kitchen now putting the finishing touches on the meal, and I cannot wait to dig into it later this evening. It is going to be a feast for two, but scaled down for sure. But yeah, it is a very weird year, this 2020. I mean, usually we're talking about the first, you know, 2 months of the regular season. We're well into it by now. We've got all kinds of storylines developing. Is this team as good as they look? Is this team as bad as they look? Right now, we have nothing. We don't know when the season's going to start. We don't know when what it's going to look like. So it is a weird, weird time right now, but take it one day at a time.
Well, one thing that might be able to help out, and they're not paying us to talk about this, but you and I both have the Oculus headset.
Yes.
The,
The virtual reality.
Thank you. I don't know why I wasn't remembering that, but yes. And I will speak for myself. I don't play it nearly enough. It is an amazing piece of technology. It's pretty lightweight. I know they have the Oculus 2 now is out for the Oculus Quest 2 is now out for the holiday season. It's pretty reasonably priced.
Boogaloo.
Yeah, I would, I think that Doug and I would recommend it. I know I would recommend it, but
highly recommend it.
There's some really,
and if for those that are wondering about motion sickness and vertigo and anything like that, I have a friend, a coworker that is very sensitive to motion sickness and has shied away from VR in the past. And he has heard me rave about this to him at work. He got it. He got the Quest 2. He does not have a problem with it at all because it is wireless and it's pretty tailored to the people that are new to VR.
I mean, I'm fairly sensitive to that kind of stuff. I don't normally ride roller coasters and, you know, things like that. If I ever have an option, I always drive everywhere because I get car sick sometimes. So yeah, it is better than the PS4 headset, which is really heavy and bulky. And that one can like kind of give you a headache just because it's so heavy if you wear it for more than a couple hours. I have that, and I have there's a game called Star Wars Squadrons that's amazing, but I can't play it very often because it just, that one does, well, I mean, that's a flying game, so maybe that's also contributes to it too.
Yeah.
Anyway, to get to the point I was going to talk about, you took part in a VR karaoke party. You told me. We haven't talked about this. You had texted me about it.
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
It was a, I attended, as it were, last night. So I log on to the Oculus, as I often do, with the intention of doing one thing, and then I do something completely different because something shiny gets my attention. So I log on, and I'm a stickler for the updates. I don't know about you, Ed, but when I see that there are updates for games or stuff I have, that's the first thing I do, is get everything updated so that if I want to play it, it just loads. It's ready to go. So I log on, and there's updates available. And one of them that was updated was the big screen, which is the movie theater that they have, virtual movie theater. And I have not yet seen a full movie on there, but I have gone to the lobby and looked at the 3D, and the 3D on there is fantastic. So I'm like, all right, let's see what the update is. Let's see what it is. So I go in there, and they now have these rooms that you can go into where people will host your room. So there's the Eddie Garcia room, which I don't know what your gamer tag is, but you know, it's Eddie's room. And if you host something in there, you can invite other people or you can make it public. So somebody, and you can connect your Oculus to your PC as well and share the files that you have on your PC in the screen. So somebody hooked up their PC with a karaoke software and had a party and made it public so people could come and go. And it was just on random. They weren't actually operating the machine. They just set it to random and walked away and just left it going. So people are coming and going, and it's people from all over the world. There was a lady from New Zealand. There was a lady from Rio. There was a teenager from Indiana. There was a guy from San Francisco, and all different ages, walks of life. And it's just this karaoke bar. And so what we did is we were kind of, if you knew the song, then go ahead and sing. And the thing that was nice is I've never done karaoke in my life because I am tone deaf. I cannot sing at all. But there were, if you knew the song, then get up there and sing. And nobody was good. We were all terrible, but it was the anonymity of being an avatar in a virtual world without your name on it. It doesn't say Doug Stolhand on it. It says, you know, whatever. And so it was a blast. I was in there for probably 3 hours until my battery died on the Oculus because it was one, I was talking to people. It's this huge room, so you can go over to the kind of farther away and just talk to people. There's people just kind of mingling and talking about different things. This one guy was creative. He used the 3D artwork that you can buy or you can use in there to build instruments. And then he would go over and play the drums for a song and play air guitar. And he drew a saxophone so that he could play the sax on songs, keyboard. It was fantastic. And it was just this coming and going, really a good vibe and feel. And it was also, I think the reason I was enjoying it so much is it felt like I was out. It felt like I was at a party, a karaoke bar. There was music playing. There were people. It was fun. And I was sitting on my couch and not going anywhere. And when I was done, I was home. It was a lot of fun. And I don't know if you and I want to get together for a karaoke session someday, Ed, but that guy just left it going and it seemed like it was going to be up for a while. And it was fun. I would highly recommend it. But just something like that makes it worth it. It was free. It was fun. And it was something that I've never done before and may never do again, but it gave me the experience of being, and there was like kind of a stage. So when you sang, you got up there and were looking at their avatars who were either singing along with you or rocking out or doing whatever.
Or covering their ears.
It was a lot of fun. There was none of that. The avatars can't do that, unfortunately, but it is not good when they leave. If they walk out. But no, it was a lot of fun. When I got done, I'm like, man, I gotta tell Ed about this because it's just such a weird thing for me to do. So out of my comfort zone to go sing, quote unquote, in public. But because it's not in public, there wasn't that self-conscious or self-awareness of that.
All right, two questions. Number one, how do you walk up to someone and talk to them without like hearing, you know what I mean? How does that work when people are singing and it's not like the audio is just people singing, but you're talking to someone? How does that work?
The software is built so that it's, so I'll try and describe the room as best I can. It's like a humongous living room in a really rich house. So there was a bunch of the kind of a big semicircle couch that people could sit in. There was a fireplace over on the side with another couch and another seat. There was an area in the back that had just kind of like a dance floor. And then there was an area over by the door that was kind of where the bar would be and that area. So you could go to different areas. So if somebody is sitting at the couch, let's say, or over by the fire, if there's two people sitting over by the fire, you can hear the person singing because they're on stage, of course, and that's the predominant audio. But you cannot hear, or at least it's very much in the background, the people over at the dance floor talking. And the person next to you is brought forward. Their volume is louder. So as I'm talking to this guy next to me, he and I can hear each other. And we can still hear in the background what somebody across the room is saying, but it's not as loud as the person next to you. So it's based on your proximity to the person, how well you can hear them. And the person singing is the loudest, of course, because it's a karaoke bar.
Was your wife home when you were doing this?
Yes. Yes. And she was asleep. But the first thing she said to me this morning was, "I love you, but you are a terrible singer." And I said, "I know." I said, "I'm completely turned off." She's like, "I was listening and I'm like, is he singing? And, you know, is that a Journey song? What is he singing?" And just, oh my God. And it reminds, I said, it's the old Flanders line. "Daddy, is he killing that song?" "Yes, son. Yes, he is." I am completely tone deaf. But if you have fun with it and you go with it, by all means. And the fun thing is, because it's virtual reality, as you know, your environment gets involved. So there's a guy that was singing a Tenacious D song, and he was giving it everything he had. And I'm not a fan. I'm not very familiar with Tenacious D's music, but these lyrics are just mile a minute and not PC, and they're fantastic. But it's just not. It's really fast and a lot of energy. So he's really into it, and he's like, he gets done, and we're all clapping and hey. And he's like, "Man, my neighbors are pissed. I can hear them yelling at me." He's living in an apartment because it's the middle of the night and he's yelling. He's singing as loud as he can. So there's that. And then there was one guy that was singing, and then he's like, "Oh, man, I just kicked my dog." And he had to. And so he had to go and, "Oh, you okay? You okay?" And So he stopped singing.
Apparently
in the middle
he was,
and made
he
sure
was
his dog
singing
was
and
open.
Dancing at the same time.
Yeah, he was. Oh, you get into it. You know, it's tough to sit there like I don't know who would be the modern quadriplegic, but it's tough to just sit there still and not move when you sing, when you, especially if it's a song you know and like, you know, when Hungry Like the Wolf comes on, you got to move.
Oh, of course. Of course. Well, that does sound very interesting. I don't know if I will try that or not, but, and I've always said,
and if you just want to sit and watch and take part in the fun, there was a lady that did that. She didn't sing. She just enjoyed the atmosphere and talked to people. There, you can do that too.
I've always said I went to one karaoke night and I did not sing, but I've always said it's for people to be drunk and be terrible. It's not for people to audition for American Idol, because we had a guy there who was there specifically to show everyone how great he could sing. And he sang American Pie, the Don McLean song that's like 8 minutes long. And everyone is just like, looking at their drink or looking up at the ceiling and just like, oh my God, come on, buddy. That's not what we're here for.
Yeah. My wife woke up at one point in the middle of the night and said she was going to the bathroom, and on her way back, she heard me say, I'm going to sing this next song doing my Christopher Walken impression. And I did. And it was awful, but it was fun because this is how Christopher Walken would sing, you know, the Undone, the Sweater song by Weezer. And it was fun. I highly recommend it. You're absolutely right. It's not for, you know, if there's like a sad song, and that's the thing, the guy put it on random, which is fine. I don't expect him to be manning the DJ booth all night, but there were songs that just nobody knew, you know, like some song comes up and we're like, does anybody know this song? Nope. Well, we just let it play then, the instrumental, as we talk and go about the room, and then the next song comes up. And there were a lot of Christmas songs because of the season. So unfortunately that was in there a lot, but yeah, when they got Enter Sandman, I'm like, I'll take this one. I know Metallica. And the guy on the drums, he knew it. So he was singing it. And there was a guy with a really deep voice. You remember the guy at Fresno State that had, like, we always called him like the voice of Satan or whatever. He had that ridiculously deep voice. Do you remember him at the radio station?
I don't remember.
But anyway, there was that guy, and there was that kind of a guy, and he could sing the extreme lows. Uh-huh. So it was just a fun thing. And you know, you hear somebody say she's from New Zealand, or you can hear the accent, and then people are talking to her about, you know, what's life like in New Zealand right now, and the person in Rio. I said, oh, I just watched a show about Rio, so I talked to her for a while about the food in Rio and the conditions there and stuff like that. It was really like going to a party, which is something I never do, without leaving my house, karaoke bar going all night. It was, yeah, I just got done and I'm like, that was a lot of fun. I was just amazed. And that is not what I logged on. I logged on to play Star Wars. And I'm like, I'm going to play the Star Wars game. And I end up at a karaoke bar for 3 hours until the battery dies.
All right. Well, very good. It actually does sound like a lot of fun. That was obviously our off-ice report, a little chit-chat about what happened with us this past week. And now we get into the actual first period of this week's Puck Podcast, the recap of all the news in the past 7 days in the NHL.
You know, and as I think about that, Ed, let me stop you before you can move on. Because it's a screen thing, right? So you can share your screen on your computer in your room. There's no reason you and I could not host a virtual party to watch NHL games in the Oculus. So if any listeners have an Oculus Quest or Quest 2, there's no reason you and I could not host a virtual party or sit together and watch Fresno State football on our Oculus.
Well, we could. I have questions about that, but we'll save that for another time. Yeah. We obviously, as has been the case the past few weeks, some teams have news, some teams do not, and we will go team by team for the teams that actually have news. But I do want to start off the first period with kind of the big league story of the week, and we still don't know when the season is going to start, but there's been another little wrinkle thrown into here as far as when the season might start, and that is because the NHL and the NHL Players Association are well, they've hit a snag, I guess is what they're calling it, as far as what the league would like from the players to start the season. And the owners have asked the players to change the terms of the new collective bargaining agreement just 4 months after it was agreed upon. NHL owners expect to take a significant financial hit for the upcoming season due to the ongoing COVID-19 pandemic and its impact on revenues, specifically arena attendance. The owners informed the players that they're looking for additional cash flow and brought two ideas forward. The first idea was deferred compensation that climbs to 20% this season and escrow at 25% with no changes to subsequent seasons. In the new CBA, again, which was agreed upon in July, along with the return to play plan that allowed us to finish last season, the players opted to defer 10% of their 2020-21 salary to be paid in three installments from 2022 to 2025, and escrow was capped at 20% for the season as well. So again, they agreed to 10% and 20%. The owners wanted to go to 20% and 25%. The second idea is deferred compensation that climbs to 26% in the 2021 season, and escrow increases above 8.5% from years 4 through 6. The current CBA has escrow capped at 10% in 2022-23, and then at 6% from the 2022-23 season through the 2025-26 season. I know that's a lot of numbers for you to digest. Sources told ESPN that when the suggestions were presented on the NHLPA player rep call on Wednesday, players were appalled. An unnamed player said, quote, "We just signed a new CBA 4 months ago, and in that agreement, we accounted for this season not being a typical season. And now they're trying to walk it back and change the structure on us. That's bull. If we came to them and said we wanted to amend the terms, there's no way that would fly," end quote. When the CBA was negotiated during the pause, both the owners and players presented financial outlooks for the best case, moderate case, and worst case scenarios, and the worst case being a full season without fans in arenas. The CBA was forged with those scenarios in mind and during the pandemic itself. According to sources, NHLPA Executive Director Donald Fehr and NHL Commissioner Gary Bettman remain in regular communication and have been speaking frequently. An unnamed agent said, quote, "The players want to play and the owners want to play, though there are a few that have said they would prefer to sit out if there are no fans," talking about owners. Gary Bettman is managing them. "Everyone wants to play, and we will play, but there are going to be some serious negotiations first, and it might get ugly," end quote. Doug, you're certainly more intelligent on these types of things than I am. I'm not even going to pretend that that's the case, but it certainly can understand, if you're the players, why you would be upset by this. And if you're the owners, to me, it's one of those things, it's like, well, let's throw it out there and see if we can get them to negotiate on something and help us out a little bit. But I mean, my first impression of this was, if I'm a player, I'm like, you got to be kidding me.
Yeah, 100%. And especially the players that are, I saw one report that said the players on the, from a player that was on the NHLPA conference call, said that there were audible gasps of disbelief when they read this out. Think about that. Yeah. I mean, hey, here's what the NHL's proposing. And people gasping in disbelief. When's the last time you gasped? And yet that was the players' reaction. And the players that are, some of the players that are the most upset are the players that just signed deals as free agents, because they took the new CBA into consideration and negotiated their contract and their payments in such a way to minimize their exposure to the escrow and the reduced pay. So a player like Alex Pietrangelo, who was due to make $8.8 million a year, could end up making $6 million a year if the NHL has their way. And he's obviously upset because I left a team I was very comfortable for to get more money. And now you're telling me that I structured my deal in such a way to get the majority of that money. And now you're telling me I won't get that money because you want to change the terms. And what it sounds like to me is the owners want to pass all the financial losses, or as much of it as possible, onto the players.
Which isn't a surprise.
No, but it's a joke. No. We're going to lose $300 million this season. So how about you guys take a collective $300 million, you know, hit in the pants? No. If I was a player, I would have listened to the report and tried to maintain my composure, and I would have just told my vote as the NHLPA rep, or my advice to Donald Fehr, not even advice, my statement as he works for me, would be, we want the CBA we just negotiated to be honored as written. That's it. That's it. And walk away at that point. And to try and renegotiate this thing simply because you're going to take a financial hit. And keep in mind, the owners, every one of them, are billionaires. These are not people that cannot absorb this loss and will have to turn their pockets out and wonder where their next meal's coming from. They can find the money somewhere in their organization. The players are not going broke either. Then that's the thing. The owners always do this. They're going to portray the players as the greedy ones. So they're going to make it look like, in the court of public opinion, oh, Alex Pietrangelo, apparently $6 million a year isn't enough for him to play hockey. Meanwhile, you poor people are trying to pay your bills at home and trying to put food on the table. Yes, but the point is, he just negotiated a contract worth $8.8 million, and none of us would take a pay cut of $2.8 million a year so that our billionaire boss could avoid taking a pay cut. So I'm on the side of the players in this completely. The owners, as you said, if their goal was to just, let's throw that out there and see what they say, maybe they take it. If they don't, no harm done. It was incredibly tone deaf, though, as much as I was singing. And it just, it fell flat. It was a non-starter, and it really puts, you know, we thought when they got this new CBA, we thought we got years of labor peace ahead of us. This is great news. And now to hear that the season is in jeopardy because they can't figure out how to divide the millions that they will make is very disappointing.
Well, we had this unnamed agent who I thought was incredibly optimistic about the situation. I agree with you, and people can have their own conclusions as to which side they want to take. And maybe you feel like, well, in these times, everyone is going to have to negotiate and figure something out, and everyone has to, you know, take a hit, so to speak. But I agree with you. If I'm a player, I tell the NHL to go to hell. I mean, again, if this report that I just read is accurate, they apparently took into account the worst case scenario, and then they agreed to this new CBA. So hell no,
was a CBA from 5 years ago, then sure, you have to reconsider. But this is one they just negotiated last or earlier this year. So there's no reason for this to be changed.
I agree. Like I said, if I'm a player, I say we just agree to a CBA. That's the one we intend on keeping our agreement with, and that's it. So hopefully this doesn't impact the season coming forward, but we shall see. And as you said last week, and this is another log on the fire, the January 1st targeted start time for the season doesn't seem like that's going to be the case. And this is certainly another hurdle thrown in front of that for the season to start then. It's hard to imagine the season will start on January 1st, but we shall see.
I mean, that's 5 weeks away. We have no agreement in place on the financial structure for the league in this year. We have no announcement of the start date for training camps and all this stuff. And we've got players all over the world. And the coronavirus is raging and surging here in America. So it seems unrealistic that it'll be going in 5 months or 5 weeks. Now, the one thing I did see in a report that is both encouraging and discouraging, encouraging in the ignorance is bliss side of things, is the players and the owners both realize this is the wrong time to be hashing out how are we going to divide up these millions of dollars. And so both sides want to avoid negotiating this thing through the court of public opinion and see the value in keeping this behind closed doors, we will see how much they are able to adhere to that. But none of us want to hear daily updates about billionaires and millionaires arguing over how much money they all get. None of us want to hear that. There's never a good time, but this is a really, really bad time to be doing that in public.
All right, let's get to the news of the week involving each team, if there is any, and we will go in alphabetical order this week, starting with the A's, and no news that I saw involving your Anaheim Ducks. Doug, you can correct me if I'm wrong there. You're shaking your head. No. Also, no news for the Arizona Coyotes. There was news involving the Boston Bruins, where they signed forward Jake DeBrusk to a two-year extension worth $3.675 annually. DeBrusk, who was a restricted free agent, has been a big part of the Bruins' secondary scoring. He, on his three-year entry-level contract, which just concluded, he had over 40 points in each of his first two seasons in the league, and then last season had 35 points with 19 goals. So Jake DeBrusk getting a two-year extension worth $7 million and change for the next couple of years.
Yeah, as you said, $3.675 million per year, which is a great, great value for the Boston Bruins. He projects probably to be their fourth best forward as far as scoring, behind David Pastrnak, Brad Marchand, Patrice Bergeron. So you've got your essentially your fourth best forward signed for 2 years at less than $4 million a year. That's a fantastic price to get Jake DeBrusk at. And I like this deal a lot for the Bruins. I guess I like it for Jake DeBrusk. He is a restricted free agent when it ends. So even if he produces as he thinks he will, he's still going to be under team control without arbitration rights when it expires. And so we'll see. He's going to have his work cut out for him. But 43 points, 42 points, 35 points in a limited role last year. And really, he's never played a full season. The most games he's played in a season is 70. And he's got 43 points. And then in the playoffs, he's a proven performer as well. A couple years ago, 11 points in 24 games. So this is a guy that is young but productive. His best seemed to be ahead of him, and this is a very team-friendly deal. And the only thing I like about it for him is that it is short-term, so that if he does achieve his potential, he can cash in a couple of years.
No news that I saw for the Buffalo Sabres, Calgary Flames, or Carolina Hurricanes. We do have news with the Chicago Blackhawks. The team has hired Team USA women's hockey star Kendall Coyne Schofield as a player development coach in their latest series of hockey operations hires. The organization also added former NHLer Eric Condra as a player development coach. Coyne Schofield and Condra will assist the team's AHL affiliate, the Rockford Ice Hogs, in the skills development and scouting evaluation, as well as assessing potential prospects. Coyne Schofield will also serve as a youth hockey growth specialist, specifically focusing on grassroots youth hockey programs and clinics, implementing girls hockey programs as well. She was a forward with the U.S. Women's National Team, an Olympic gold medalist, and a six-time world champion. She is the first woman to participate in the NHL All-Star Skills Competition, which you might remember, and was a broadcaster for a while with NBC Sports and NBC Sports California. Eric Condra was a seventh-round pick of the Senators back in 2006. He played in 372 career NHL games, recording 40 goals, 99 points in stints with the Senators, Lightning, and Stars. So a couple of coaching hires in the system for the Chicago Blackhawks.
I like the hire of Schofield. What's her last name? I know Schofield.
Coyne hyphen Schofield. Her husband.
Coyne Schofield.
Her husband is an offensive lineman for the Los Angeles Chargers.
Is that right? Schofield. Yep. No. Any relation to Dick Schofield, my favorite baseball player of all time?
I don't know. I don't know that.
Spelled the same. But I like that hire because she has great hockey skill, as we saw in her career and at the All-Star Skills Competition last year. She can fly around the ice. She proved her knowledge of the game as an announcer. It's a loss to us as viewers because she was great as an analyst on NBC Sports Network. I liked her work, and I was hoping she would get more work in the future. But I like this hire because having somebody working for the Blackhawks as a coach and in the community developing girls hockey programs is going to be very valuable in that area and get more girls interested in hockey and believing that not only can they play hockey, there's a future for them when their playing career is over in hockey as well. So all good things here for the Blackhawks hiring her. As for Eric Condra, I don't know why I always remember him, but I do remember him as a Senator. He's one of those guys that just I absolutely remember, even though he was a depth role player for teams I'm not fans of.
No news for the Colorado Avalanche this week. We do have some news for the Columbus Blue Jackets. And unfortunately, earlier today on Tuesday, we saw the report that several players for the Blue Jackets have tested positive for COVID-19. TSN senior hockey reporter Frank Cervelli says that it is they don't know the exact number, but he heard it was a significant number of players that have tested positive over the past 7 to 10 days. Those players immediately began to quarantine, and the club closed its off-ice facilities at Nationwide Arena beginning the week of November 16th. No voluntary workouts were scheduled this week due to the Thanksgiving holiday. The organization has and will continue to follow all the recommended guidelines aimed at protecting the health and safety of the players, staff, and community at large, as set by the NHL, local, state, and national agencies. The club anticipates players returning to off-ice facilities next week for voluntary on- and off-ice workouts.
What were they together as a team? Or is this coincidental?
Everything I just read is all I know. I have no idea what the circumstances are surrounding this.
Yeah, I mean, it's very odd that a significant number would test positive unless they're somehow together.
I mean, that makes sense.
Practicing.
That makes sense. That they, maybe they're working out together. And then players do that. I mean, players will get together and work out together.
There's nothing against that if they're doing it without, if it's a team coordinated practice, that is not allowed. But if players just want to get together on their own and skate without coaches present, they're perfectly within their rights to do so.
Yeah, the organization is not going to shoo them out of the arena. But hey, you guys can't be here. Get out of here.
Well, they can't go to the team facility, but they can go. Yeah, they if they go down to Lakewood Ice.
Well, what if if the team facility is open to the public?
Yes. Okay. Correct. But they can't, have the team open up the practice facility. You know what I mean?
But let's be realistic. I absolutely believe that happens. The teams know if the players are coming in and skating around. They may not tell them you have to be here, or it's the whole I don't see anything. You guys do whatever you want. I'm sure that happens.
Yeah. 100%. It's unfortunate. All we can hope is that nobody gets seriously ill and all make a complete recovery,
which is extremely likely. I don't know of any professional athlete that has gotten sick enough to be hospitalized from this that have tested positive. So,
they're usually obviously in great shape, young,
right.
They're in the minimal risk category for this, but if any of them have a pre-existing condition that would put them at further risk, then they probably shouldn't have been taken part.
Correct.
In this to begin
with, and hopefully they stay away from people who are more susceptible.
Right.
Other note involving the Blue Jackets: GM Jarmo Kekalainen was asked this week about the continuing negotiations with forward Pierre-Luc Dubois, who is a restricted free agent and yet unsigned at this point. And he continues to say he is very confident that Pierre-Luc Dubois will be signed by the team before the start of training camp, that there's not going to be any extended negotiations that would take time away from him being on the ice. If you're not familiar, Pierre-Luc Dubois, 22-year-old center. He is the number one center for the Blue Jackets. He's their lone remaining restricted free agent, number three pick in the 2016 draft, led the Blue Jackets last year in points with 49. He had 18 goals and 31 assists in 70 games. Also 4 goals, 6 assists in 10 postseason games for Columbus. So obviously a very important player.
Yes, a guy they need to get signed, and they have the cap space to get him signed. They currently have over $9 million in cap space. He is the only restricted free agent still unsigned. He's the only player unsigned. So it's just a matter of how much they want to give him and for how long.
So if you're,
just the terms of the agreement.
If you're Pierre-Luc Dubois' agent, I assume are all negotiations on hold until...
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Oh, yes. Well, finish your thoughts.
No,
I know what you were going to say.
Yeah, but with the news that we read at the top of the first period...
Correct.
I would assume that anyone negotiating a contract right now is going to wait and see how this shakes out.
Not Jake DeBrusk.
Well, no, he was, unfortunately, his timing is everything, as they say. And
yeah, well, I mean, you had to know that they were going to, there were some negotiations. But yeah, it's, you got to put yourself in a position to, and if Pierre-Luc Dubois is looking at a long-term contract, if he's saying, let's sign an 8-year deal, then I'm going to want to know, when can I defer payments? What's the escrow going to be during these things? How should I arrange my signing bonuses so that I get as much of the money as possible and minimize my risk due to this situation? But I, at this point, absolutely wait until there's an agreement in place. There's no rush. And then let's hammer this thing out.
News for the Dallas Stars, goalie and playoff hero Anton Khudobin expected to be fully ready for training camp after having surgery to fix a nerve issue in his right arm. Khudobin, who signed a 3-year, $10 million contract on October 9th, had surgery after he felt numbness in two fingers on his right hand during the Stanley Cup playoffs. The 34-year-old had a 16-8-4 record with a 2.22 goals against average and a .930 save percentage in 30 games for the Stars last season. 26 of those were his starts, and then helped Dallas reach the Stanley Cup final with a 14-10 record, a 2.69 goals against average, and a .917 save percentage with one shutout in 25 games. 24 of those were starts. Also for Dallas, goalie Ben Bishop and forward Tyler Seguin have started the rehab process from their surgeries. Bishop had surgery October 21st for a torn meniscus in his right knee, and Seguin had right hip arthroscopy and labral repair on November 2nd. Each is expected to require 4 months of recovery. Bishop was limited to 3 games in the postseason. During the regular season, he had a 21-16-4 record, 2.50 goals against average, .920 save percentage, with 2 shutouts in 44 games. Seguin had 13 points, 2 goals, 11 assists in 26 postseason games after leading the Stars in the regular season with 50 points, 17 goals, and 33 assists in 69 games. He has not missed a regular season game since the 2015-16 season.
The perils of going deep into the playoffs is you have less time to recover. You notice none of these injury things are, you know, your Kings, my Ducks. They've been off for 9 months. Everybody is like a newborn baby at this point. They're completely healed. But these guys that played just last month, 6 weeks ago, 5 weeks ago, are still recovering from the surgeries and the injuries that they sustained in that Stanley Cup run. So they came up short, but they got injuries as a result. And now they're still, it's good to hear. They're probably some of the teams that are the happiest that January 1st is not going to be the start of the season, because they need those extra weeks to get these guys healed. It's sounding like it's going to be a reduced schedule, not a full 82 games. So, you know, missing a player for 2 or 3 weeks to start the season could be the difference between making the playoffs and not.
No news for the Detroit Red Wings or Edmonton Oilers. As for the Florida Panthers, they have named former NHL player Shane Chirla as their new director of amateur scouting. He spent the last 7 seasons with the Montreal Canadiens in their scouting department, including the last 4 as their director of amateur scouting. He also served as an amateur scout for the Dallas Stars for 7 seasons and 5 seasons with the Arizona/Phoenix Coyotes. You know, I love hearing these old names I haven't thought about in a while. And we see a lot of these with the hirings of assistant coaches and scouts. We talked about Eric Condra. Now we have Shane Chirla. So these names that we remember as players, and usually not star players, obviously, but, it's good to hear these names again that, you remember.
Yeah. And it's, well, they're unique names too. Chirla is not a name you hear a lot. You know, Chirla Party of Two is not something you hear called out at the restaurant very often, but yeah, it is a name that you don't forget, and you're just like, oh yeah. And it's just good to see that they're still in the game and getting work. And yeah, it's just also a reminder that we're getting old when you hear how long it's been since they've been out of the game and you remember them.
For me, it's always like the Jake DeBrusk, the sons of players you remember playing.
Yeah, there was a guy that caught a touchdown in last night's Monday Night Football game.
Oh, that's right, Jefferson.
Yeah, and his dad is Sean Jefferson, who was a receiver for the Patriots in the 90s, and I remember Sean Jefferson well.
On a total aside, you know, my wife is a huge Chargers fan, so we were watching the Chargers-Jets game on Sunday, and the Jets have a veteran running back, Frank Gore. His son is playing Division I college football right now, and his dad is still playing in the NFL. That is insane.
Yeah. I mean, it's the old Ken Griffey Jr. and senior.
Yeah, it is. It is.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, they were on the same team.
And, of course, in hockey, we did have the Howes
play together.
Although,
yeah.
God knows, Gordie Howe was, he was, what, in his 60s or something, still out there playing.
But Zdeno Chara could realistically have a son in the NHL right now.
Yeah, I suppose he could. Yeah.
I mean, there's guys that are 18, 19 years old in the NHL. So he's old enough to have a 20-year-old son. He's old enough to have a 23, 24-year-old son. So, yeah, it is. Those are always amazing. But, well, yeah, when you see the son of a player, and you and I both remember guys at Fresno State that we went to school with or that we watched even after we graduated.
Their kids are now playing
and their sons are now playing on Fresno State, and it's just it's crazy.
One bit of news involving the LA Kings, Quinton Byfield, their number one pick, the number two overall pick in the 2020 draft, says that he has had a conversation with Kings GM Rob Blake and that they have basically come to an agreement that Quinton Byfield will play in the World Junior Championships for Canada until the conclusion of the tournament and then join the Kings, for their training camp once it begins. I'm not sure what different agreements players and teams have as far as some of these higher draft picks. This seems to make total sense to me. I mean, I guess if you drafted a player and you said, once we start training camp, you need to join us, I guess you could do that. But it seems logical to me that if you're a team and you have a player that's playing in the World Juniors, you're going to let them go ahead and finish that tournament, even if you've already started your training camp, before having them join you. So this seems like common sense, but that was apparently some news, and I would assume that all the players who play in the World Juniors would have this agreement with their teams. I don't know that, but that seems to make sense to me.
Well, it's an agreement. To me, it's an indication that the Kings do not expect to have Quinton Byfield on the NHL ice this season. So you're going to return to juniors anyway. You're going to continue your junior career. Go ahead and play in the World Juniors and get that experience of a tournament and playing for your country and all that stuff, all the good stuff that goes with it, and come to camp when you can. And we'll get, you know, get a taste of the NHL size, speed and game and get some tips that we want you to work on. And then back to juniors you go. But if that was a guy that they expected to be in their lineup on opening night, I think they might say, why don't you come on in to camp? Because we need to get you up to speed in the NHL as quickly as possible. And playing against teenagers is not going to do that for you.
I don't know. I suppose I could see that side of it. But if I'm Rob Blake and I think he's going to make the opening night roster, I'm still okay with him missing 2 weeks of training camp so he can compete in the World Junior Championships. I don't think it's that big of a detriment that if he doesn't, you know, come and skate with us for a couple of weeks, he's still playing hockey. He's still, you know, playing at a high level, you know, so I don't know. I just thought that made common sense, but we'll see. Maybe if there's a player that gets pulled off of their roster to join the NHL team, then we'll talk about that when it happens, I guess. Let's see. No news that I saw involving the Minnesota Wild, Montreal Canadiens, Nashville Predators, New Jersey Devils, New York Islanders, New York Rangers, Ottawa Senators, Philadelphia Flyers, or Pittsburgh Penguins. Sorry for fans of all those teams.
Wow, we're skipping all the way down to the S's.
We're down to the San Jose Sharks, and Sharks forward Tomas Hertl told The Athletic in an interview this week that he is good to go for the start of the season following off-season surgery. He said, quote, I feel good. I actually started skating in August back home in the Czech Republic, and now we're skating three times a week here in the Bay Area. My knee feels good. If we were playing games for sure right now, I'd be ready to go. No issue. I feel strong. One good thing, I still have time to get even stronger and stronger and make sure everything is good, end quote. Hertl had surgery February the 3rd to repair a torn ACL he sustained during a game on January 29th and missed the final 18 games of the season. He was tied with Logan Couture for third on the Sharks with 16 goals last year and finished sixth with 36 points in 48 games.
I don't think we expect San Jose to be a contender, but he is probably their top forward at this point. Logan Couture was never an elite scorer and is a step below, but Tomas Hertl is right there with, it's either him or Timo Meier, maybe Evander Kane has a great year, maybe Logan Couture, maybe even Kevin LeBanc comes forward, but they need him to be healthy. They need him to be productive for the entire season. And we will see. That's good news that he is going to be ready to go, because when everything's in place, he is potentially their number one center, and you obviously want that guy in your lineup as much as possible and feeling as good as possible.
No news for the Seattle Kraken this week, although I did see, I didn't read it, but there's an article in The Athletic that kind of went in depth on what the Kraken will be doing between now and when they open the season as far as them getting their organization together and their plan and all kinds of stuff. If you're interested in that, you can check that out.
I will say this for the Kraken, for news. If worst case scenario comes to pass, and if there is no 2020-21 season because of labor peace or strife or, yeah, coronavirus, whatever the case may be, how does that impact the contracts and the expansion draft? Because do you push every contract back? Does every contract get just absorbed for this year and just written off? So if I sign somebody to a one-year deal, they never even played for me, and they're now a free agent?
I don't know if you saw the story about the ECHL, which we'll read in a minute, but that is a very interesting situation regarding teams in their league and what they're going to do this year.
All right.
No news for the St. Louis Blues or Tampa Bay Lightning. For the Toronto Maple Leafs, defenseman Mikko Lehtinen and the Maple Leafs came to an agreement to where he is terminating his contract with Jokerit Helsinki in the KHL and is now en route to North America. The 26-year-old posted 8 goals and 17 points in 17 games with Jokerit this season. His second season in the KHL, he signed a one-year contract with the Maple Leafs in May after a breakout first season with Jokerit, where he had 17 goals and 49 points in 60 games. With the Maple Leafs, Lehtinen will compete for a spot on the blue line, among other offseason additions, including TJ Brody and Zach Bogosian. My favorite story of the week comes from the Vancouver Canucks. Did you hear about this, Braden Holtby and his pets?
No.
Well, you'll enjoy this, I believe. New Canucks goalie Braden Holtby has now made it safely across the border and into Canada after a bit of a delay. It seems that Holtby's two pet tortoises, Maple and Honey, were being held up at the border by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Services. Apparently, Holtby had not filled out the proper paperwork, but eventually Braden, Maple, and Honey were able to get across the border and are on their way to their new home. The ordeal was played out on Twitter, with Holtby's wife asking followers for advice on getting the situation ironed out. It did end up with pictures being put on Twitter of the two tortoises and a Canadian flag. So all is well with Maple and Honey, who are now proud to be in Canada with their papa, Braden Holtby. They're beautiful tortoises, yeah, by the way. I don't know what type of, and I'm sure I've heard this before, but Doug, what is the difference between a turtle and a tortoise?
I don't know.
I'm sure that
the spelling.
Yeah, it's, but there is a difference, right? It's not just two ways to say the name of a creature.
I don't know if it. I don't know if it's like saying the difference between a burro and a donkey.
Well, I think it's like a porpoise or a dolphin, right? They're very closely related, but there are differences. An alligator and a crocodile.
Well, an alligator and crocodile are two different animals. Yes.
Well, they're very similar. I mean, isn't it freshwater, saltwater? Is that the difference?
You'd have to ask the saltwater redneck on that one.
He is available, I believe.
He is available for rent. He'll be, if you can track him
down.
He'll
be joining you in the karaoke room, I'm sure. But
no, that was, and that's a reference to a movie that you and I love, Peanut Butter Falcon. But anyway, I honestly don't know. I should know that as an animal lover. I should know that. My family actually owns tortoises. I have a lot of family that have tortoises and have always had those. And, I don't know. They are,
it's an interesting pet to have because it is very low maintenance, right? And,
Yeah. But also like they're almost always like my family keeps them outdoors. They burrow, they hibernate. My cousin had to rescue one. He fell into the pool and luckily he was home and he was able to fish him out of there. But, I mean, they're very cool little animals and they're faster than you think. You think, oh, I can go to the garage real quick and leave the gate open. They will scoot. They can scoot when they want to. Now, not jackrabbit fast, but faster than you think. So I don't know, but that is interesting that would be the hang up to get them in there. And then they, you know, well, we're going to stay in America for until this gets resolved and then get our tortoises up to Vancouver. We're not leaving without our pet tortoises, Honey and Maple. They're coming with
us. Absolutely. Yeah, Brit. Yeah.
And that is like, that is a pet that could potentially outlive you as well.
Wow. Okay. I guess so. They do live to be a pretty old age. We talked about the Columbus Blue Jackets. Also news of a similar sort for the Vegas Golden Knights, where four members of their team tested positive for COVID-19 this week. The team said in a statement, quote, "Those individuals have been self-isolating and are all recovering well. As a precautionary measure, the Golden Knights off-ice player area's locker room, lounge, gym, training room, and video room will be closed to all players and staff through the Thanksgiving holiday weekend," end quote. Team announced that its practice facility, the City National Arena, will remain open to the public, including hockey programming and the official team store. Those are all still open. If you need to go get your reverse retro jersey, don't worry about that. It's still open. But anyway,
we're still willing to sell you stuff and take your money.
Of course.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Of course. I've got the difference between tortoises and
tell
turtles,
me, please.
A tortoise has a more rounded and domed shell. So higher. Mm-hmm. And the turtle has a thinner, more water dynamic shell because the turtle is adapted for life in water. And the tortoise is adapted for life on land.
There you go.
There's also a difference in the forelegs and the hind legs. So all their legs are different, as the tortoise will actually have larger legs to help them move around and carry the extra weight. And turtles will have more flipper-like legs to make it easier for them to cruise through the water. Which makes sense, because when you see those turtles coming out of the water to lay their eggs on the beach, it's like their front legs are like flippers. And a tortoise has got legs almost like an elephant or something like that. So there's the difference. There is a difference. Yes.
Well, I did when I saw the pictures of Maple and Honey, I did think, wow, those are some pretty spectacular looking shells. They were very, yeah, very bright and colorful.
And they, if they like those animals, Vancouver would be a great area to have a couple of turtles that might like the water.
No news for the Washington Capitals, and we wrap up our look at all the teams and the news from this week involving teams anyway, with the Winnipeg Jets, who have hired Dave Lowry, another one of those old names, as an assistant coach. He was most recently the head coach of the Brandon Wheat Kings in the Western Hockey League. He also has been an assistant in the NHL with the LA Kings and Calgary Flames. Began his coaching career with the Calgary Hitmen in the Western Hockey League, where he was an assistant coach back in 2005, before later becoming head coach of that team. He was also head coach of the Victoria Royals for 5 seasons, played 19 years in the NHL with the Canucks, Blues, Panthers, Sharks, and Flames. I remember that big, bushy red beard that he had. His son, Adam, by the way, plays for the Jets, so father and son. We talked about that earlier. Will be reunited on the bench in Winnipeg.
Did you know he was an assistant coach for
the
Kings?
Yes, I did.
Yeah, I mean, I assumed you did, but I don't remember him as an assistant with the Kings. I remember him with the Panthers during their Stanley Cup run, and that's been a while ago because it's the last time they won a playoff series, I believe. Isn't that correct?
I don't know that.
1996?
I don't know.
I think that's the last time the Florida Panthers won a playoff series.
That sounds right. It does sound right.
Yeah. I mean, that's terrible that it's been 24 years. But
yeah, I saw.
It's the fact.
I saw the, was it the Lions and I think the Bengals have not won a playoff game since the 90s.
Yeah.
Wow. Goodness.
Yeah. You and I take for granted the success of our teams.
A little bit.
Well, I mean, yeah, but we've never had, you know, 20-some years of futility. My God.
Yeah, it's tough.
Florida Panthers, yeah. And again, that's why you and I always kind of give them a pass of, the Panthers fans, they don't support their team. What market would? It's been 24 years since they won a playoff series. But yeah. Who's going to put up with that and continue to shell out their money? I can't wait to buy more gear. How much more? To increase my tickets, absolutely. Come on.
Let's close out the first period with some random shots. I mentioned this earlier.
I was 22 when they last won a playoff series. Yeah. 22. How old were you?
I don't know. Math is not does not come naturally to me, as you know. But
how old are you now?
I'm 51. Just turned 51 last month.
You were then 27 years old when they last. 27. Young. Life was ahead of us.
Let's get to the random shots. I mentioned this story a moment ago with the ECHL. And remember, they're not the East Coast Hockey League. They're now just the ECHL. It's the letters. They don't go by that, the extended version. Their entire North Division has suspended operations for the 2020-21 season due to the economic impact of COVID-19. So the six teams that will not be playing this season in the ECHL, the Adirondack Thunder, which is a New Jersey Devils affiliate, the Brampton Beast, which is affiliated with the Ottawa Senators, the Maine Mariners, New York Rangers affiliate, the Newfoundland Growlers, which is affiliated with the Toronto Maple Leafs, the Reading Royals, who are affiliated with the Philadelphia Flyers, and the Worcester Railers, who are affiliated with the New York Islanders, all will not play in the ECHL this season. That does leave still 18 teams in the ECHL. Although, before this announcement was made, the Atlanta Gladiators, who are affiliated with the Bruins, and the independent Norfolk Admirals also opted out of this coming season. Now, players on teams are players on these teams that are not going to play now become free agents. The league and the Professional Hockey Players Association are still trying to work out what does that mean when their teams do return for the following season and the contracts that they've signed. So there's some interesting things to work out, but that's for a later time. For now, all these players are available. The ECHL regular season is scheduled to begin on December 11th. The league has created a two-tier schedule. 13 teams will start in December with a 72-game schedule, and the other teams will start on January 15th with a 62-game schedule, and the playoffs will be seeded by points percentage.
Let me give a quick suggestion to the ECHL as a revenue stream. Put VR cameras in your rinks and sell the opportunity to watch your games to people like me and Eddie because we would pay. It would be just a cool way to see your sport. Secondly, this is a very interesting idea to do this. I would think they would have to sign one-year deals.
Yeah, I guess so.
I mean, I can't sign somebody to a five-year deal and then the Norfolk Admirals are back. Well, I'm out of here.
I wonder, and I don't know this, but I mean, do ECHL teams even sign players to long-term deals? I wouldn't think you'd sign anyone to longer than like a two-year deal, right? I mean,
yeah, that's true. I would think it would make more sense to do a loan situation where a team that is going to play says, I would like to get player X from you. And you say, okay, we agree to loan him to you for this season. And then when this season's done, he's back on our team. And he would get paid as his contract stipulates from you. And it would be a year of service to the league for all purposes. But that's very interesting. And pity the players that don't get any calls. I was on the Atlanta Gladiators. They canceled their season and nobody wanted to add me to their team.
That's probably going to happen for some players, obviously.
It's absolutely going to happen. We got one other random shot, Ed, before we sign off. Unfortunate news from the world. I don't know if you covered this or not in the past week, so if you did, I apologize. But you remember the University of Alabama Huntsville getting rid of their hockey team?
Yes.
And their alumni, Cam Talbot, among others, rallied to save them and buy them another season. Well, the University of Alaska Anchorage has decided they were already going to get rid of the program after this season, and they decided they are not taking part in this season, so they are officially a former college hockey team as they have opted out of the WCHA for this coming season, which is already underway in college hockey.
Yeah, how about that? College hockey has already started. That's
surprising. Our friend Big Lou watching games on the Big Ten Network. And I should as well if I had that, which I don't. But that is that's unfortunate. And the players that were looking forward to playing one last year for the Seawolves, no more Seawolves hockey. They're trying to raise some money, but as I said, the season's already going and they still need over $2 million raised as by last count. So it doesn't look good. And it's unfortunate that there is no hockey in Alaska, where, of all states, it seems like hockey should be in Alaska if it's going to take place.
Yeah, maybe they can bring back the program at some point down the road. But, yeah, for now, I did see that as well, that programs have been put on the shelf for – and they're unfortunately for them, their fundraising efforts not going nearly as well as it did with Alabama Huntsville.
Which is crazy, because you got to think they got some more people in the league, right?
I honestly don't know. I mean, the only Alaskan hockey player I can remember was Scott Gomez. I don't know that he went to school there, but maybe he would be willing to help out just for the sake of, you know, hockey in his native state. I'm sure there are a couple others, but I don't know.
Yeah, that's true.
An old friend of the show, Doug, unfortunately, is in the news this week, and not for a great reason, but we wish him well. Jason LaBarbera, former NHL goalie, along with Michael Dyke, have both tested positive for COVID-19. They are assistant coaches for the Canadian World Junior Championship team. Obviously, LaBarbera is the goaltending coach. So they have been quarantined, and hopefully they'll get better and be able to resume their duties here in the near future. But if you don't know, Jason LaBarbera, one of our old friends, he came to Doug's house and watched playoff hockey with Doug and myself.
Unannounced. Just showed up one day.
Well, I'm pretty sure he was invited by you.
Yeah, he was invited.
But he was
gracious enough to accept our
invitation. He was the number two goalie at that time of the LA Kings, and he later played for your Anaheim Ducks, and a swell guy, huge Metallica fan, and just a good dude, and we wish him well. I don't know if you still are in contact with him in any way, but last we heard, he was, I think, a goaltending coach in the Western Hockey League, I wanted to think.
That's correct.
With the Calgary Hitmen, was it?
Yep.
So, So unfortunate for him to be in the news for that reason.
Yeah, I had not heard that. I will have to send him our best
wishes.
Please
do. Please do. So hopefully he's doing well.
Jay Beagle. Jay Beagle is a former Alaska Anchorage alum.
Oh, there you go. Come on, Jay Beagle.
And he is currently in the NHL. So pass the hat around your teammates there, Jay. And raise the money.
And maybe he is. Who knows? We don't know that he isn't.
Yeah. I'm not telling him he has to, but, you know, you would think you would want to help out your alma mater if you could.
God knows if we could, we would help out our beloved Fresno State hockey team.
Yeah, if I was making millions of dollars a year and they said we're going to cut the program, I would at least do what I could as using my status in that sport to try and help them out.
And unfortunately, I have a couple of passings to announce. Fred Saskamoos, who you may or may not remember, was a part of my all-name team many years ago. One of the first Indigenous players to play in the NHL has passed away after a presumed case of COVID-19. He was 86. Fred's son, Neil, announced his death earlier today on Tuesday on social media, and he said that last week his father had been hospitalized in Saskatchewan for a presumed case of COVID-19 after experiencing wheezing and chest pains. Saskamoos played 11 games in the NHL for the Blackhawks. He was one of the first Indigenous players to play in the NHL, as I mentioned. During his time in Chicago, he did play in games that featured Maurice Rocket Richard and Gordie Howe, so he was on the ice with some of the legends of the game. Also had a storied junior career playing for the Moose Jaw Canucks of the Western Canadian Junior Hockey League. When his playing career came to an end, he worked in the area of developing minor hockey and other sports programs across Saskatchewan. He was named to the Order of Canada in 2017. Rest in peace, Fred Saskamoos. Also, Ken Schinkel passed away. He was a member of the expansion Pittsburgh Penguins, later coached the team and served in their front office in various positions. He was 87, made his NHL debut for the Rangers in 1959 and played 265 games for the Rangers before being selected in the 1967 expansion draft by the Penguins, played 6 years in Pittsburgh, was the first Penguin ever to be selected for an all-star team, and also the first player to ever score a hat trick in a playoff game for the Penguins. He did that against the Oakland Seals in 1970. Finished his career, which was 636 NHL games with 127 goals and 198 assists. He was named coach of the Penguins in 1973, replacing Red Kelly. He had two different stints with the Pens, had a coaching record of 83 and 92 with 28 ties. The Penguins did make the playoffs under Schenkel twice, but lost in the first round each time. He stepped down as coach in 1977 and then was assistant general manager and scouting director for the Penguins. He was a part of the draft that drafted Mario Lemieux in 1984. He also became a part of the Hartford Whalers organization in 1989, and that's where he finished his hockey career. So also rest in peace, Ken Schenkel, an original member of the first ever Pittsburgh Penguins and a coach for them as well. Top of the second period here on the Puck Podcast, and it is Eddie going solo as we present another recap of the outstanding hockey documentary, Hockey, A People's History, that was created and aired on the Canadian Broadcasting Company back in 2006. As I've mentioned, all of these episodes are available on YouTube. I'll put the link to episode 2 on Twitter and on Facebook, but if you just type in Hockey People's History into Google, you are not Google. Well, I guess Google as well, but into YouTube, you will see that all the episodes are available for you to watch online. Many of you have probably seen this series before, but if you haven't, I highly encourage that you go and watch it, either in its entirety or you could watch along with me. Now, I have seen this before, but as I've mentioned, when we did episode 1, always great stuff to get out of it. It's still educational. You retain things, obviously, the more times that they are put into your brain. So still enjoying watching these episodes. We watched episode 1 a couple weeks ago and did a recap on that. And I did want to read an email that was sent in regarding that. And this one comes from Brad Zuckerman. And he says, "Bonjour, Doug et Ed." He says, "I enjoyed," this was an email that we saved from last week. So this is actually from 2 weeks ago. He says, "I enjoyed last week's episode, as I have heard every episode since you started in 2006. With the review of Hockey, A People's History. In it, you mentioned how the first ever ice hockey game was organized with written rules, was played at the Victoria Skating Club in 1875, and the first ever Stanley Cup was awarded in that arena in 1894. Unfortunately, the last time that building was used for hockey was in 1925, 50 years after the first game was played there, at the Montreal Forum. As the Montreal Forum became the newest arena in town in 1924, it became home of the Montreal Maroons and then also to Le Club des Hockey Canadiens in 1926. Interestingly, the building of the Victoria Skating Club still stands on the same site as it was converted to a parking garage in 1925, and the two-story brick building still serves that purpose today, as it just so happens that the entrance to the garage and building is on the Stanley Street side, about 2 blocks away from where the Bell Center is, home of the Canadiens. By the way, the street is not named after Lord Stanley, who donated the cup, but rather after the Minister of War in the UK, who eventually became the British Prime Minister. As a former Montrealer now living in Vancouver, I return periodically to visit my hometown, and the last time I was there, I attended a Canadiens game and coincidentally parked in that building with my brother, who happens to be a member of the Quebec Historical Society, for all matters relating to sport, and it was he who informed me of the building's history, as I was quite unaware. The building measures just slightly larger than the standard 200 by 80 foot ice surface, and one can easily imagine how an ice surface would be accommodated in that building. And interestingly, the ice surface, when the arena opened, was produced by the natural air temperature, no cooling system, so use of the ice surface was limited to a short season from December to March. Lastly, in a strange coincidence, when we parked in that building, there was a van parked in there with the name Creighton Plumbing Company on it, which is, of course, as you know, and my brother pointed out, the name of the man who organized the first ever indoor game, James Creighton. Sadly, there is no indication of the importance or history of the building anywhere to be seen, something my brother Earl the Pearl has been trying to change by petitioning the city to have corrected by having a bronze plaque to be placed on the outside of the structure. Sorry for the length of this email, but since there weren't any last week, I thought I would try and fill the void. Always listening, as always, Brad Zuckerman. Well, Brad, thank you for the email. Glad you have enjoyed the show since it started, and glad that you enjoyed our first recap of episode 1 of Hockey, A People's History, which was entitled A Simple Game. And if for some reason you didn't listen to our recap of episode 1, I would highly encourage you to go back and watch episode one and then maybe listen to the show from a couple of weeks ago. But I'll give you a real quick recap. As was mentioned in the email and as was mentioned a couple of weeks ago, episode one, A Simple Game, basically talked about the origins of how hockey started in Canada and how it was part of the growth of the country of Canada. The growth of hockey kind of went hand in hand with the growth of the country. A couple of key moments from episode one, as was mentioned in the email, 1875, James Creighton organized the first indoor ice hockey game with rules. And he was credited with, again, having the first sort of organized, recognized hockey game. Then we had the first family of hockey, the Stanley family, which of course is where the Stanley Cup comes from. They saw the game of hockey at a Montreal Winter Carnival. Lord Stanley, who was the General Canada of the General Secretary of Canada, I believe was his title. He liked what he saw. His kids also really liked it. I don't think they were adolescents. I think they were kind of young adults, but anyway, they picked up on the game and with their father's backing, kind of helped to spread the game and grow the game as well. And so where we left off from episode one was where hockey started to finally become a business. It was making money. People were attending and paying money to owners who own these arenas and own these teams. The media was starting to make money off of writing about hockey and these games. And so the players were like, okay, let's see. Everyone's making money off of this but us. And so now it's time for us to get in on this as well. So as we go into episode two, which again is entitled The Money Game, it only makes sense that this is goes into the origins of how the NHL and professional hockey started to become to be as a business and how players were starting to use this as a career for something they could actually do for a living. So we will start episode two. We'll watch, 10, 15 minutes of it. We'll pause and we'll come back and we'll talk about what we've just seen. Again, if you want to go watch the episode and then come back and listen to this, that's an option. If you want to listen to this, then go back and watch the episode. Whatever you want to do it's entirely up to you. But here we go. Episode two, Hockey of People's History, entitled The Money Game. All right, so we've watched the first 18 minutes of episode two of Hockey of People's History. And as you would expect, it is basically about the start of professional hockey in North America. It started out talking about a player named Frederick Taylor, who at the time, and this is right around the turn of the century, early 1900s, was becoming kind of a hockey prodigy. He was clearly one of the more talented players in all of Canada. Word of mouth about how great this player was spreading. And I didn't write down his name because he was a jackass and I don't want to remember his name, but there was a person in Ontario who was very high up in organized hockey, and he decided he wanted Frederick Taylor to play on his team. And so he sent word to Frederick Taylor, who was kind of playing out in the sticks. I want you to play for my team. And Frederick decided, well, I mean, you know, I've got a job here. I'm supporting my family here. And I like playing hockey here. So no, thank you. I'm not going to go. So this gentleman was extremely upset about this. And he decided that he was going to ban Frederick Taylor from playing the sport of hockey in the entire province of Ontario. Somehow he had that kind of pull. So we go from that to learning about in northern Michigan, there was a town, a boom town, that was being created because of the copper mines in the area. And copper was a big deal because copper was being used as electricity was being produced to the cities. Copper was a part of, like the mechanism to be able to get electric current from here to there. So the copper mines were a big deal. A lot of people were going to northern Michigan in the United States, and they were working in the copper mines, and all of the businesses started popping up to support those copper mines. You had obviously bars and places to live and things like that. So There in Michigan, it became a boom town. And then there was some people there who wanted to start hockey as well, for all the reasons that you would expect, because there was money to be made, because all the people that were now coming to work in the mining industry wanted something to do to spend their money on entertainment. And so the first professional hockey league was created in northern Michigan. It was called the International Hockey League. James R. D. was the man who financed it, and a guy named Doc Gibson was kind of appointed as the man to spread the word that professional hockey was being played in this area in northern Michigan. He was a native Canadian. He was formerly a dentist. That's how he got his name, Doc. And he was a very good hockey player. And James R. D. basically hired him to go to Canada, go back home, let all the great hockey players know they could come to northern Michigan and get paid to play hockey, which they couldn't do in Ontario. Well, obviously, everyone who was anybody in hockey wanted to make money playing the sport they loved, so they all in mass started heading to northern Michigan to play in the International Hockey League. Well, this obviously did not sit well at all with the amateur hockey associations in Ontario, who threatened to ban any player who left to go play in that league from playing hockey again in Canada. The threat didn't work at all. Obviously, the players were like, screw you, I'm going to get paid to go play. And so the International Hockey League was a pretty successful hockey league, the first professional hockey league in the world, for 2 to 3 years. Unfortunately, the recession hit the U.S. economy. The copper mills dried up, and those towns and the league with it basically disappeared. But as they said in the episode, the genie was out of the bottle. There was no going back at this point because there was too much money to be made, and the players understood that if you wanted our services, then you were going to have to pay us. By the way, Frederick Taylor, the man who was banned from playing in Ontario, did go to northern Michigan to play in these professional hockey leagues and was a big star and made some money and so on and so forth. It was also interesting that this guy, James R. D., created the kind of the first real hockey stadium there in northern Michigan for these games to be played. He called it the Ampadrome, and they showed pictures of it. It did look pretty impressive at the time, and he claimed it was the greatest hockey arena in all the world and so on and so forth. First 18 minutes of it, and we've had explained how professional hockey has started. We had the first professional league. And now after this league is now folded, we're going to see, I'm sure, the next, creation of a hockey league in Canada. And, I don't know if we'll see the National Hockey League formed in time in this episode, but we'll find out about the early professional hockey leagues, I'm sure, in Canada going forward. So, let's get back to more of episode 2 of Hockey, A People's History. All right, so we're back checking out episode 2 of Hockey, A People's History. And so we have gotten a very interesting next step here in the journey of the creation of the NHL. So we have this this gentleman entering the picture. He's a senator from Ottawa, an Ottawa senator, and his name is MJ O'Brien. And he basically owns a town that is outside of Ottawa called Renfrew, Ontario. And he is a senator, like I said, very wealthy man. And he kind of basically owns this town. And he decides that he wants to create a team, and he wants a shot at competing for the Stanley Cup. Now, we had learned a little bit earlier, and I didn't mention this, but now the Stanley Cup really isn't the Challenge Cup that it was when it first started, where kind of any team from anywhere could challenge for the Stanley Cup. That's really not the case anymore. Kind of the higher-ups in Montreal and Ottawa now run the Stanley Cup, have the Stanley Cup, and they're not going to allow these little towns across Canada to be able to throw a team together and challenge for the Stanley Cup, because now hockey players are being paid and these little towns can't afford to offer the same type of revenue streams and the incomes that is expected now, right? If you're a small town, you're not really paying your players that much, and they're not creating the kind of revenue that some of the big city teams are, understandably so. And so it's now kind of become a thing where these little towns really don't have a shot at it anymore. But still, MJ O'Brien wants his team from Renfrew, Ontario, to try and get a shot at the Stanley Cup. They're called, what was it, the Creamery Kings, I think it was, named after the local dairy in town. And so he does what, you know, any wealthy man that wants to have a good hockey team does. He goes out and he signs some of the best players around. He signed Frank and Lester Patrick, which are pretty familiar names in the hockey world, to contracts. They were making $5,000 each. He also signed Fred Taylor, who we mentioned earlier, who now goes by the name Cyclone Taylor, as he was playing in a hockey game and a local politician saw him play and he was so good, he nicknamed him Cyclone, and there it stuck. So now he's known as Cyclone Taylor. So he signs with this the Creamery Kings, I think it was. He gets $5,200, which they pointed out was more than the Prime Minister of Canada was being paid at the time. They also kind of went into a little side note that Fred Taylor had met. Well, he got signed by a team in Ottawa, and on top of his salary, he demanded a job. And so he had a civil servant's job as well. So it kind of just shows some of the extra demands that players were making as far as not just getting paid, but having other things on the side, bonuses, I guess, so to speak. So anyway, he met a young woman in Ottawa, and Fred Taylor was kind of from, as they said, the wrong side of the tracks. He was not from a wealthy family, and he wanted to court this young woman, and she took him home to meet her mother, and they were a little more affluent, and the mother was like, "You're not going to marry this guy. He's a hockey player. These hockey players don't make any money." And so part of his motivation to playing well and making as much money as he could was to prove to this woman that he could support his daughter and marry her. I think that's eventually what happened. But so anyway, the Creamery Kings that were funded by MJ O'Brien, they wanted a shot at the Stanley Cup, and he created a really good team. So he sent his son Ambrose O'Brien to meet with the higher-ups who controlled the Stanley Cup. And they basically kept him waiting in the lobby. They never took a meeting with him. He waited in the lobby for hours and hours, and it just never happened. But as fate would have it, he ran into a guy named Jimmy Gardner, who was from the Montreal Wanderers, and he also wanted to get his team for a shot to play at the Stanley Cup. And they basically did the same thing to him. They just kept him waiting and never saw him. And so O'Brien and Gardner met, got together and said, "You know what? Screw them. Why don't we create our own league and go head to head with these guys?" So they created the National Hockey Association, which in 1917 would become the NHL. And they were also looking for kind of a rivalry team to play against the Creamery Kings. And they had the very wise idea to create a team of French Canadian players, and to kind of have that French-Canadian, English-speaking rivalry with the Creamery Kings. And they were called the Montreal Canadiens. Only problem was that there was already a beloved team in Montreal made up of French-speaking players. They were called the Montreal Nationals. And there was a big controversy that the people in Montreal, in particular the media, was saying, "These Montreal Canadiens, we should not accept them. They've been created by these English people. They're not created by French Canadian people like the Nationals were." Well, it was seemed to be a good idea at the time. The only problem was is that the Montreal Canadiens signed the best French Canadian players because MJ O'Brien had a lot of money and money talks. And so the people, while they, I think the sentiment was with the media, they couldn't deny that the greatest players were playing for the Montreal Canadiens, and they wanted to support the best players and the players that they liked. And so they basically latched onto the Montreal Canadiens. And even though the National Hockey Association didn't eventually succeed, and even though the Creamery Kings never got to play for the Stanley Cup, obviously two incredibly important things in the history of the NHL came to fruition through the efforts of MJ O'Brien, Senator MJ O'Brien. And that was, of course, the National Hockey Association that eventually became the NHL in 1917, and the creation of the Montreal Canadiens, the most storied hockey franchise in NHL history. So we've got the final part of episode 2 of Hockey People's History coming up here, and we'll be back to close out this last part of episode 2 here in just a minute. All right, so we're back to wrap up episode 2 of Hockey of People's History. And so we talked about how Senator MJ O'Brien helped to form what would become the NHL. And then we talked about how he was a part of the creation of the Montreal Canadiens. But a couple of the players that were on his Creamery Kings team, Frank and Lester Patrick, were going to have a huge impact on how modern hockey was going to be played. Now, their team folded, and so they headed back home to Vancouver. And their father was making a lot of money in the lumber industry there in the Pacific Northwest. And he ended up, he was literally a millionaire with the logging companies that he owned. And his sons, Frank and Lester, were able to enjoy their dad's money. And they decided, with his help, to organize and form their own hockey league that would be basically bring professional hockey to the western part of Canada. So they sat down with their dad and they ended up creating the Pacific Coast Hockey Association. And then Frank and Lester set out east to bring back the best hockey players they could from the east to the west to play in their newly formed league. And they were able to get a lot of the big players, including Fred Cyclone Taylor. And he ended up getting a lot of money to come and play in Vancouver. And it was interesting that they noted that it was one of the Patrick brothers who called him a superstar and that he was going to get more money than anyone else because of his talent. And it was believed to be the first time that that term was ever used on a player. That's, I don't know if that's true or not, but if it is, that it's interesting that superstar is a term that may have come from hockey and describing Fred Cyclone Taylor. But he ended up going out to Vancouver, joining the Patrick brothers and several other big players, and they created the Vancouver Millionaires, who you may know is the first West Coast team to win the Stanley Cup. They defeated the Ottawa Senators in 1915 to win the Stanley Cup. But more important than that, the Patrick brothers were not only players who loved the sport and were shrewd businessmen, but they actually thought about the rules of the game and how could they make the game of hockey better. And so they did a lot of innovations with the Pacific Coast Hockey Association to make the game we now know. I mean, before the Patrick brothers and their league and their new rules, we didn't have line changes on the fly. We only had 2 periods instead of 3. There were no numbers on the uniform so that the fans could identify the players more easily. The goalies were not allowed to, they had to all be stand-up goalies. They couldn't drop down to their knees or they couldn't lay down on the ice to try and stop shots. All that changed in the Pacific Coast Hockey Association. They also started farm teams. But the biggest change, and you may be shocked to realize that at this point, this was not a part of the sport of ice hockey, the forward pass. Now, if you're a football fan, if you're an American football fan, you also know there was a time in American football where you could not throw the ball down the field, which is it's insane to think about now because that's all we do in American football is throw the ball down the field. But it was like rugby back in the day with ice hockey. You could pass the puck laterally or you could pass it behind you, but you had to skate the puck down the ice. You could not pass it down the ice. Well, because of the Patrick brothers and their obviously for their forward thinking, they're like, this is going to make the game so much more exciting. People are going to watch our game and our league more than that old league that's kind of stuck in the past. So we're going to allow players to have the forward pass, to pass the puck forward. And so they did, and it was obviously hugely successful. And just all of those elements that they brought to the modern game, they basically, the Patrick brothers are credited, and rightfully so, with creating the modern form and style of hockey that we see today. So When you think about today's hockey and what you see, the Patrick brothers, Lester and Frank deserve a ton of credit for that. So that is the conclusion of episode 2 of Hockey of People's History. Very educational. Again, stuff that I remember now after the fact, but it's always good to hear about it, either for the first time or to hear it again. And I don't know. I'm a huge history fan. I think it's important for people to know how things were created, how they formed, the story of how we got from there to here. And so anyway, that was just episode 2 of a 10-part series, Hockey People's History. But already, really, I think, entertaining and informative. I hope you feel the same way. And I hope you were able to enjoy episode 2 of Hockey People's History. I'm not sure how many more of these we're going to do as we go along. We're going to do all of them eventually. But as we are getting closer, we've got the World Junior Championships coming up, which we'll be talking about, obviously. We'll be doing interviews, I'm sure, regarding that. Once the NHL season gets a little bit more concrete as far as when that's going to start and when the NHL eventually announces what the actual divisions are going to be for this unique coming season with the Canadian-only division and the other divisions, I'm sure we'll have interviews to talk more about that with people that are in the know. I know Doug next week is going to start his looks at each team and how they have improved themselves or not for the coming season, the moves they've made to this point. So lots of things coming up for our second periods going forward in the coming weeks. But we will get back to doing at least a couple more of these episodes, I'm sure, of Hockey of People's History before the season starts. And then maybe we'll have to continue this with episodes, who knows, 7, 8, 9, 10, maybe next off season. But again, hope you enjoyed episode 2. Hope you're enjoying this series. Again, I'll post the links to the shows from YouTube onto Twitter and Facebook. And you can always just Google it or search YouTube as well for Hockey People's History. And you can watch along and hopefully be entertained. So thanks for joining me for this look at episode 2. And we got the third period coming up. Time for the third and final period here on the Puck Podcast, and we have some emails to read. And as I mentioned on last week's show, we had so many emails the previous week that we were going to hold a few out that were kind of timeless, so to speak, and read them in subsequent episodes. And we have a couple of those emails that we will read on this week's show. And the first one comes from Andrew. He's in Chino Hills, California. He says, "Dear Doug and Eddie, just wanted to write you guys to let you know that there are actually people listening to your show. Don't be fooled by the lack of emails. Also wanted to thank you guys for what you do week in and week out and for providing the same great coverage for every NHL team. I'm a Red Wings fan living in Southern California now, and it seems like forever since I saw my team play a game." That's probably because it kind of was. Yeah. He says, "Even when they were playing, let's be honest, it was brutal. As a Wings fan, I'm hopeful that Steve Yzerman can help lead the team back to contention in the next 3 to 5 years. I like the moves he's made so far, mostly because he isn't buying a team with long and overpriced contracts. Ken Holland did that for far too long, and it seems like they are now just at the point where they can start from scratch and build around a few good young players like Larkin, Mantha, and Hronek. Aside from hockey, I did want to get your opinion on one other topic. Where do you guys stand on the acceptable time frame to put up Christmas decorations? My personal preference is no earlier than the day after Thanksgiving, and that they have to be taken down by January 1st. I feel like it's starting earlier and earlier this year, but or every year, but this year it was the day after Halloween. I usually don't see stores have Christmas merchandise at that time. However, I don't recall seeing so many people already decorating their homes. Perhaps we all just need a little extra cheer for obvious reasons this year. Anyway, once again, I appreciate all you guys do. Keep up the good work. If my email is the only one this week, feel free to read it very slowly to fill the entire third period time slot." Again, that was Andrew in Chino Hills. My wife, Karen, has opened the door and is looking at me right now because she loves Christmas, and she wanted to put up Christmas decorations before Thanksgiving. And unfortunately, I had to put my foot down and say, "No, honey, we had a deal. We've had a deal for many years that because Thanksgiving is my favorite holiday, we will not put up any Christmas decorations until the day after Thanksgiving." And so that is what we do. But I agree with Andrew. Our neighbor across the street has put up all his Christmas decorations within the last week. There are other people in our little community here who have done the same. So, yeah, I have noticed more Christmas decorations going up earlier than I have in the past. And I would assume it is probably for the reason that people who are really into Christmas feel like, why not start it sooner and get me in the holiday spirit sooner?
Yeah, I'm home. We're not going to be celebrating Thanksgiving this year anyway. So let's start the celebration now. Like I said, I mean, in that karaoke bar, a lot of Christmas songs were worked into the rotation. And it's not yet Thanksgiving. So I am, of course, one thing at a time. Everything has its time and place. My wife's family, they would start decorating on the evening of Thanksgiving. So after they've eaten and put away all the leftovers, you can start decorating. The Christmas season has begun. That's fine, but you got to have Thanksgiving first. You got to finish that meal and that celebration before you move on to the next one. And I agree that it should be done before January 1st. If you're in a new year, you should not still be celebrating Christmas, but to each their own. I mean, that's just how you and I look at it. I'm not going to be.
Well, he asked us, so.
No, yeah. I know. I mean, but I mean, if you're one of those people that, you know, you want to decorate all year round and there are those people, okay. I worked in a Christmas shop at Disneyland that was open year round. And it was mid-July, and I'm sweating my cojones off and selling, you know, knickknacks and tchotchkes for Christmas with, you know, the music playing. And, do you have Goofy skating on the pond? Well, let me take a look, you know, let's see what ornaments we got. And it was crazy, but when you're in that world, and that's, you know, the idea was these people that are traveling.
Yeah.
Are not going to be here in the holiday season, but correct. They still want to get their decorations and knickknacks for the holiday season. So let's give them an opportunity no matter what time of year they come. So I got it, but it was weird to be in the festive mood and listening to that music in July. My first email comes from David. He does not say where he's from that I know of. Let me see. Nope. But he's got info on the Shark Tank versus Google situation that we mentioned last week. And he said, this is a multifaceted issue. First, the city of San Jose is trying to increase non-car transportation, including quote-unquote road diets, trying to reduce the lanes on roads to add more bike infrastructure. Google has been in the process of buying up all the land around the SAP Center, including parking lots, which it plans to convert to a new campus. They plan to use the existing bus, train, and light rail hub with supplemental private shuttles for their employees. They want limited car access and parking on their campus. So the Sharks are afraid of the ability for efficient access to the arena due to less parking and less lanes. Also, although there is a public transportation hub across the street, it has limited connectivity to major parts of the Bay Area, which Google will fix with their fleet of private shuttles. It will be several years before anything happens with this. As a fan, I am hoping the Sharks are not just laying the groundwork now for a new taxpayer-funded arena in 5 years, but we shall see. So that is the information of why they think it will not be viable should Google complete their plan for them to stay in their current facility. And it is an access thing for their fans.
Our next email was also an email from last week that we saved for a rainy day. This is from our friend Big Lou, who's here in Southern California. He says, Thanksgiving season greetings, gents. I am still editing and downsizing my 10-page email to you about the LA Kings and their number one pick and the race in hockey/North America. So be looking for that.
Okay.
We'll see if that comes
that
this
sounds
year
like it,
or not.
Yeah, that sounds like it's going to be the second period 1 week.
He says, I have a question about hockey players being drafted in the NHL. How often do players switch positions after being drafted? In football, players sometimes switch from offense to defense or vice versa, switching from linebacker to safety. Does that ever happen in hockey? Thank you both for your continuing puck podcasting excellence and stay Rona-free, your friend from the LBC, Big Lou. Well, it's very rare, Lou, that you will see a forward switch to defense or vice versa, but it has happened. Dustin Byfuglien did that. Obviously, Brent Burns has switched from forward to defense and vice versa. But they're rare. It does not happen often. So rare that you remember when it does happen. And those are the only two guys I can even think of that come to mind that did it with any kind of frequency, where they did it for seasons. You know, it wasn't just for a game in an emergency or something like that. And it's not uncommon that a center would switch to wing, if necessary. If you have a number of good centers in your organization and you want to get them on the ice, you might put them on the wing, even though maybe they're more comfortable playing center. But it happens, but not often as far as any kind of switching of offense to defense type of a thing.
Yeah, the first one that I remember doing it, going from, and certainly nobody goes from goalie to another position. You're not gonna get in that kind of a craziness.
Not even an emergency situation.
No. But in the they will be an emergency goalie, not anymore because they have that set up now. But there used to be, you know, a player may have to play goalie in a situation. But the first one I can remember was Sergei Fedorov switched to defense for the Detroit Red Wings during a season when they just got hammered with injuries on defense. And the head coach at the time, Scotty Bowman, knew that Sergei Fedorov was such a great skater and such a great player that he could make that shift. And he ended up being a very good defenseman for his brief stint. And I think Scotty Bowman went on and said that he thought he could have been an all-star if he was a defenseman all full time. But it was not for a full season. It was due to injuries within a season. And but it is extremely rare that a player would do that. And it's almost always due to shortage at one position or another. Our next email comes from Matt, friend of the show down in San Diego, a beautiful part of the world. He says, "What's up, fellas? Great show this last week. I really enjoyed the nearly 3 hours of hockey content where the only major news is jerseys. And I do have some opinions on those babies. For the most part, I think Adidas did a really good job with some obvious exceptions. My favorites for sure are the Avalanche, Kings, and Wild. I can see the argument about the Hurricanes one needing some Hurricane stuff, but as a guy whose ringtone is literally Brass Bonanza, I'm contractually obligated to love anything Whalers themed. Huh. The Canadiens and Devils also did a nice job. I love the Canucks one, and if it had the skate logo, it would top my list. And props to the Ducks, Caps, and Blues for fully embracing the awfulness that was the mid-1990s fashion. As for my Bruins, it's fine, but I needed a Pasternak jersey anyway, so I'll buy one. As for the losers, the Islanders, Wings, and Leafs are all boring. It's like they didn't even try. Come on, Islanders, I want to see the Fishermen. The Knights one is trash, but they've only been around 3 years and just released their first third jersey, so I honestly don't see the point. And I know the Jets want to pretend the Thrashers never happened, but it would have been cool to see some homage to them. But by far the worst jersey is Buffalo. Eddie, this thing is an affront to hockey, God, and the Queen. How in the world did you vote this an A+? Woof. Thanks for all the great content during the off season. Now I'm off to convince my non-sports fan wife that I need to go on 4 or 5 hockey trips a year to hit all 31 arenas like Mike DeKalb. Matt in San Diego.
Well, Matt, I respectfully disagree, and especially since you and I think Doug seem to all agree on all the jerseys that you mentioned that you liked. I liked all of them too, but we very much disagree on the Bruins, or the, excuse me, not the Bruins, the Sabres. Like I said, I love blue and gold. That's my favorite color combination. So that's a huge reason for it. And I love that old cross swords logo. So there's not really much to explain. I love it. I think it's a fantastic jersey. So we do disagree on that one, but agree on most of them. Our next email comes from Johan. He's in Sweden. I guess I could have used this for news for the Anaheim Ducks, but he says, "Hey guys, just wanted to give you a quick update regarding Hampus Lindholm. He had his last day of preseason practice yesterday and is heading to California today." And this was dated on the 20th. He says, "Is this a sign that the season is indeed going to get going soon?" And again, best regards, Johan in Sweden. Well, as Doug mentioned, if things go as scheduled, yeah, we've got training camps coming in a couple of weeks. And if he's coming from Sweden to the U.S., there's you know, hoops to be jumped through, I assume, for that. Once he gets here, he'll have to quarantine for a certain number of days. So, yeah, I mean, hopefully that means that things are good getting started. But as Doug has mentioned, it's not far away from training camps actually starting if we are able to stick to this current timeline. So players that are overseas are going to have to start making their way over here soon.
Yeah, it'd have to be en masse. And plus, not to mention their tortoises. The obligations of getting their pets, the llamas and stuff across the borders are going to be tough. Brent Burns alone, his zoo that he has, would be something if he ever got traded to a Canadian team.
That's true. He does have quite the exotic pet collection.
Yeah. So it would be – no, if we start seeing a lot of players, I don't believe – and correct me if I'm wrong, Johan – but I don't believe that Hampus Lindholm was playing in the Swedish league. So if guys are leaving their teams to come back here, then I think it's a good sign. But if they're
we did have that story of the Maple Leafs player who left the KHL to come over here.
Yeah, but I'm saying I want to see a lot of players. I think this is an example of Hampus Lindholm saying, "Well, I've been home now for 9 months. Allegedly, my season's going to get started soon. I need to quarantine. I need to be cleared of all the protocols in order to take part. So I'm going to leave now and start the process." I think that's all this is. I think he's just being proactive. And I hope he is back on the ice soon. Our next email comes from Alex. He does not tell us where he's from. Oh, he's from Columbus, Ohio. Go Blue Jackets. He says, "Hey, Doug and Eddie. It's been 2 years since I last emailed you guys. And when I did, it was regarding a fantasy hockey league. Speaking of which, I'm looking to scratch the itch again this upcoming season and get a league together for whatever season the NHL is able to make happen. Do you guys want in? We can make things interesting by awarding the league champ with the reverse retro jersey of their choice." Well, I'm out, and I know Ed's out because Ed does not play fantasy sports, but I'll let him speak for himself. Ed, do you want back into a fantasy hockey league?
I very much appreciate the offer, but no. I have enough things to waste my time with and don't need something else to do, so... thank you, but
he doesn't even have enough time to play with his Oculus Quest.
That's right. I've got to get back on that, man. I got to play some Beat Saber and whatnot.
You got to clear Immortal. How have you not cleared Star Trek?
I know, every mission. I know.
That is one that we need to broadcast. Like, you and I need to figure out. And I know how to broadcast on Facebook when you're playing.
I'm willing to do it.
That was because it was ridiculous.
For people who don't know, there's a Star Trek game where you can play role play a member of the bridge crew, and somebody's the captain, somebody's the helm
engineer,
officer,
yeah.
All that stuff. So it's not easy, at least not for us. And we tried to do it, and we tried to be in character. So yep. Yeah, I'm all for doing that. Absolutely.
I said, "Shoot that thing! I'm trying, Captain. What button is it?
Raise the shields! I'm trying."
And just looking around and yelling at the other crew members.
Oh crap!
It was fun. He continues, Alex? Yeah. For me, his favorite reverse retro jersey, would have to be one of the three on my Mount Rushmore: Calgary Flames, my girlfriend team in the West. Learned that term from you guys. The LA Kings and the Minnesota Wild. Unfortunately, the Minnesota Wild jersey dropped from number one to number three in my rankings thanks to this piece of photoshopped work, and I'm going to ask you to open up the email, Ed. I can't unsee this, and now neither can you. It is a jersey that somebody did of the Minnesota Wild reverse retro jersey in the Subway Sandwiches logo, and it's tough to see. I still like the logo on the homage page to the North Stars.
When I saw it for the first time, you know what popped in my head? The Seattle Supersonics.
Yeah, because it had the kind of the skyline.
The exact colors, yeah.
Yeah, I still think they should have gone with that for the hockey team. That would have been awesome to stick it to the NBA. I still like the logo and the homage it pays to the North Stars. Lastly, I feel like I should weigh in on my home team's jersey, the Blue Jackets reverse retro. While I like all the components of it on their own, the color, the logo, the white sleeves, the shoulder patches, I don't think they work together amazingly. That's all for now. Let me know if you want in on fantasy hockey this year. We are both out, unfortunately. Alex in Columbus. Alex, would you have approved of a Boomer logo on the front of it? Would you have liked to seen Boomer come back and been the main logo? That would have been fantastic for those of us that liked the short-lived mascot that was incredibly phallic and ill-conceived.
Our next email comes from Leslie in Chino, California. Now, we had an earlier email from Andrew in Chino Hills.
But this is Chico.
Oh, no, Chico. Sorry, no N. Never mind. This is Leslie in Chico, California. Much different
and the
from
man.
Chino Hills. Yes.
Yeah, this was named. This was the city where the city or the show took place.
No, that is not true. And it's specifically addressed to me. It says, well, Mr. Garcia. It's Leslie again, and in quotes, female.
Because we said, could be Leslie a
could
man.
Be, yeah. Leslie is a female. She says, our Steelers are amazing this year. Yes, they are. She says, the Bungles shouldn't be a problem today. Yes, I have a Franco jersey, which is, I'm sure, Franco Harris. So she's, well, either she's a fan of the old Steelers or she's an old school Steelers fan, regardless. We're both Steeler fans, and yes,
she
Leslie,
just appreciates the legends.
We are enjoying this season immensely. It is interesting. I work in sports talk radio, so there's no shortage of people wanting to tell me that the Steelers are not the best team in the NFL despite their undefeated record, and I'm totally fine with that. It doesn't bother me one bit. It's just funny how people want to kind of rain on your parade, and I'm just like, you know what? I don't care. They're winning every game, and I'm going to enjoy it. You're not yep. going to. You're not going to dampen my spirits on what I've seen so far. She continues, the more I listen to you and Mr. Stolhand, the more I appreciate how similar we are in attitudes. I love all of the pop culture, the football and the hockey. Now to find out that you're also a Ken Burns documentary fan, another check. History, movies, pop culture references, The Adventures of Robin Hood with Errol Flynn was filmed here in Chico. I didn't know that. He says, I walk in Sherwood Forest, which is Bidwell Park, every day.
Very nice. And now she knows that Chico and the Man, the TV show, was based on her city. No.
She continues, the retro sweaters are mostly meh to flat out no for me. I do agree with Mr. Stolhan's Ducks. The Ducks blew it, and your Kings were fantastic. Colorado, the New York Rangers, the Wild, and the Hurricanes win for me. I love anything Whalers. My Canucks missed, in my opinion, but I did buy a Besser sweater anyway. Well, and then they did win, Leslie.
You got that right.
She says, thanks to Miss. She likes to refer to everyone very properly. She says,
well,
thanks
because of the confusion of her gender, she's making it very clear with everybody.
Thanks to Mr. DeKalb. I see what you're saying there. She says, I am planning my own quest. Once COVID allows, I'm going to start with San Jose, the Kings, and Ducks, and then up to Seattle and onward. So very cool. She's going to try and see as many hockey games and as many different rinks as maybe our own Mike DeKalb. But yeah, it's a great idea if you can do it. And we encourage everybody to try and do this. Thanks again for the great podcast, Leslie in Chico, California. She says, P.S. You might like History Hit TV. I don't know what that is, but we can look into it.
Our next email comes from, and I love the subject on our next email, and reverse yeah. jerseys and vasectomies.
Well, sure. I could see how those would go hand in hand.
I mean, that sounds like the name of a great album. This is from Matt, and he is writing to us from Vietnam.
Wow.
How about that? This is a guy that I met in Montreal when he was still living in Montreal.
Is he the chef?
No.
Okay.
But this is a guy, and that story you were telling me about Braden Holtby trying to get his tortoises across, I remember reminds me of Matt talking about crossing the border between Canada and the United States and how guns, if you have the permit for a gun, that can be taken, but fruit and vegetables cannot. And he's like, the guy in front of me has a rifle and you have no problem, but I have a Bartlett pear and you're stopping me. What are our priorities? That I always remember that phrasing of the Bartlett pear call out was fantastic. But he says, hey guys, just wanted to say hi and give my take on the retro jerseys. I agreed with pretty much everything you said, except for my Habs and the Ducks jerseys. Even though I must admit it looks nice and blue suits me, I just feel strange with that look for the Canadiens. I'm pretty sure someone wrote a successful children's story about why it's bad for a Montrealer to get a blue jersey. For me, it just has too much of a Toronto vibe. The biggest letdown for me was seeing the same old CH in the center. Perhaps they could have used an M for Montreal, or the Maroons, or the old green maple leaf with the stylized C in the middle. Just anything different from the standard. Now, I know that sounds strange to have a maple leaf given my previous beef with the color blue, but hey, this is just my feeling. If they had combined the blue and the maple leaf, ooh, that would not have been a good seller in Montreal. As for the Ducks, I can definitely see why you don't like it. I'm not a fan of the Mighty Ducks cartoon, but I do like the jerseys. They are unique, and although it is a silly drawing, I like the energy of the simple yet dynamic drawing. On another note, there's no doubt this COVID thing really sucks. I count myself lucky to be here in Vietnam, where the government had been doing a great job keeping the people safe. We have endured two draconian lockdowns, but in the end, it has all proved worthwhile as Vietnam has a super low death toll and has all but eliminated the threat. I can't speak to the financial toll it's taken on some people, but I digress. I just wanted to say it's really nice to know, despite all this, Eddie and Doug will be watching and commenting on the World Junior Tournament this year, a nice silver lining for us Puck Podcast fans. Anyway, love the show and love you guys. I really enjoyed the interviews recently. Like a fine wine, the Puck Podcast improves with every show. Always cool hearing from Dr. Brian Kennedy, Esquire, and amazing to have Vern Fiddler on the show. Well, enough flattery. Let's get to Mario's hot take. Peace out, Matt in Vietnam. And what timing, our next email does come from Mario.
I'm actually going to put the pause on that because I am going to pull out another email from last week because I think it's relevant to something that is coming up soon.
All right.
This email is from James. He doesn't say where he is from, but he did mention that he is a Buffalo Sabres fan. So perhaps he's in the Buffalo area. Not sure. But his email says, "Hey chaps, hope you were well. Just a quick reminder about an idea I sent you back in April. Given the season is now over, perhaps you could give a grade to each GM based on their performance during the last season. Look at the trades, new contracts, etc. that they have overseen. I think it would be interesting to get your take on the work these guys have done and how well they are placed ahead of the new season. Thanks for the show. Stay safe." That is James. And interesting that he says that because, Doug, next week you are going to start giving your grades for all of the offseason moves for each team.
I am?
Not all. I thought you said before the show you were going
to
do that.
Yes. I'm just setting you up to make you look like a fool, and you fell into my trap.
No. The only fool here is you.
Well, I disagree. But yes, next week I will be starting my annual off-season review of what every team did in the off-season and whether they have gotten themselves better or worse based on the moves they've made in the off-season. So we're going to be doing three or four teams per week.
And that obviously, all 31 teams. I mean, that obviously goes hand in hand with grading the GMs because that is
their job.
Right. They're putting
that's
the team
right.
together.
They do the lion's share of their work in the off-season. And so, yes, we will be saying, and remember, not every team needs to improve themselves on the ice to get better. And I'll explain that as we go, but that'll start next week. And it'll be a random grab bag of teams. We're not going in alphabetical order or by division. It's just going to be whatever teams strike me as interesting that week.
And our final email comes from Mario in Salzburg. He says, "Hey guys, hope you had a great week, healthy and fun. Personally, I cannot wait to get back on the mountains and finally do some snowboarding. There is not a lot of hockey news going on, so maybe this means that next season is closer than a lot of us, myself included, would think. I'm sure at some point this offseason, there will be some discussion about favorite hockey movies. For me, it is simple. Slapshot 1, Mighty Ducks, and then Mighty Ducks of Anaheim." But it's just the Mighty Ducks is the name of the movie. So those are his two favorite hockey movies. We haven't done a hockey movie review this offseason. I'm not sure if we will or not. But he continues, "Yes, the later one is a bit over the top, but people have to keep in mind it is a movie targeted to kids, and who does not love rooting for the underdog and seeing them finally win? So I don't care what others think of that movie. I like it a lot, and Coach Bombay is still a legend.
And the Hans is still a creepy old man that likes watching children play hockey."
That's very true.
You got a kid out there on the ice, a grandkid? No.
No.
What are you doing here then, buddy? I like to watch the boys play. Okay, let's go. Let's go. Everybody back to my shop to try on new gear. No.
I have Coco.
I always remember the thing in that movie of the thing that struck me was there was a newspaper that covered youth hockey like it was people landing on the moon.
And, of course, there was a radio announcer broadcasting the game. We barely have NHL games broadcast on the radio here.
Yeah, I can't see the ECHL, but little kids playing hockey, and not good.
And Bob Miller, the Hall of Fame broadcaster, is doing the games. Man, yeah. He must have had some sort of work release program or something, part of his public service. Mario did include...
Well, that is how Coach Bombay ended up coaching the team, so you could be right.
That's a good point. Mario did include a picture. Remember last week he had the rant about the politicians being shot into the sun, and he did include the picture here of Bart Simpson looking out the window at the sun. I don't remember that Simpsons episode, but then again, there have been a million of them, so kind of hard to remember everyone.
Yep.
So that'll do it for the emails this week. Thanks to all who took the time to send us an email.
Absolutely.
If you would like to send us an email about anything we talked about or anything else in the hockey world or whatever, you want to tell us it's okay to put up Christmas decorations before Thanksgiving, the email address is feedback@puckpodcast.com. We haven't had a lot to tweet about or to put on Facebook lately, but if you would like to follow us, in either of those places, we would appreciate it. Our Facebook page is facebook.com/puckpodcast. And on Twitter, we are at puckpodcast. The webpage is puckpodcast.com. And I think that's about it.
That is about it. And next week, we will have some more news on some teams. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook as we announce what teams will be doing. And maybe you can chime in with your review of your favorite team or your thoughts on the team that we will be reviewing their off season next week. But until next week, and for my partner Eddie Garcia, we thank you very much for joining us on this episode, and we hope you will join us next week for another episode of the Puck Podcast.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.